We're holding on. You'd press Omobe's second line from the bottom. We left off in the middle of a discussion like this. We started with the question. We know that the master of an Omohevria is able to do yield. The pasuk says, "Ashalo yoda," that as Kuyoksiv over there, actually, it's written loy with an aleph. It's read loy with a vav. But anyway, it means that he has it. So Ashalo yoda would mean that he does yield, that he decides that she should be his wife, and then so he's mekadesh her and makes her his wife. So now she's no longer an Omah. The ksiv with an aleph would be Ashalo yoda. If he does not want to do that, then as the pasuk continues, behefta, then he has to help with getting her freed from her status as an Omah Hevriya by accepting less money for her, etc., as we talked about a few days ago. Anyway, so now we were in the middle of discussing the question, if he does yield, does that accomplish only Erusin, or does that accomplish the equivalent of Nisurin as well? So we were talking about we were talking about that. The last thing we were talking about was you have a case. It says in a Braisa that it's possible for the father to sell his daughter as an Omah Hevriya when she's already an almana, when she's already a widow, and he'd still be allowed to sell her to a Kohen Gadol, even though the Kohen Gadol was not allowed to marry her, because if he were to marry her, Kedushin would be Tofus, because it's only an Isur Lahav. So we have to figure out, how does it happen that she would be an almana and still be under the jurisdiction of her father, that he'd be able to sell her? All this time, we're trying to work out within Rabbi Akiva's opinion, because we had before a machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Once Piras Talise Aleha, once she was already once yield had already been done, then the father wouldn't be able to sell her in the future. So we said, though, that we could make it work maybe according to Rabbi Yossi Ben Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Ben Yehuda, we're going to be discussing now in the Gemara, holds, at least according to one way of understanding him, that the yield is not accomplished using the money that the Odin paid for her in the first place, in which case we could say that the father did a kiddushin of his daughter in the usual way, just that in this case it's kind of deferred, to begin with it's done as to sell her as an Omah Hevriya, but that money is also sort of an escrow waiting until it can be used for kiddushin. If we said that, then in fact it would be impossible for him to sell her again later on once that yield has been done. But if we say, like Rabbi Yossi Ben Yehuda says, that it's not being done based on the money. It's just being done based on the fact she's his Omah Hevriya, therefore he has the ability to do yield, then the father is not really involved. So therefore we could say the father has not been the one who accepted kedushin on her behalf. Therefore he'd still have, if now the Odin does yield and then dies, then she's an almana, but she's still a katana, and therefore she'd still be under her father's jurisdiction, and he'd be able to resell her as an Omah Hevriya to somebody else. But we said, if that all assumes that the yield only accomplishes erusin, on the face of it, if it accomplishes nisuin, then that's not possible. In general, once a girl has gone through nisuin, she's out of her father's rishus. But we ended up saying, we wanted to say that maybe not. The same way as you could distinguish between erusin that she did on her own versus erusin that her father did on her behalf, maybe the same thing is true as far as nisuin. There would be a difference whether her father gave her over for nisuin, her father gave her away in marriage to a chosin who did nisuin with her, versus where she's doing it on her own. So you could argue, if we say that the yield is not accomplished using the money that she was sold for in the first place, in which case basically it's something being done all on her own, then even if it accomplishes nisuin, maybe that's not enough to take her out of her father's jurisdiction. So that's where we're holding. The Gemara says, "Hi, Mai. What kind of an argument is that? What kind of a comparison is that? B'shleima erusin, the erusin shiny. It's one thing. Yes, you can say that one kind of erusin is different than another. Yes, you can talk about if the father did erusin for his daughter, namely accepted the kesef kiddushin or whatever the method of erusin was. You could distinguish between whether he did it or whether she did it on her own. Elam Nisuin and Nisuin Mishaini. How can Nisuin possibly be different than other Nisuin? The fact is, Nisuin takes her out of her father's rishus. And Rashi points out Nisuin or Daraisa. So they take her completely out of her father's rishus. It's Daraisa, although it's interesting what Rashi means by that. I mean, Kiddushin is also Daraisa, but anyway, the point is that apparently what Rashi means is it's one thing when within Kiddushin we can distinguish between sometimes we have a Kiddushin that has the force of something Daraisa, namely when her father does it for her, versus where it doesn't have as much force, namely where she does it for herself as a Ketana, as opposed to Nisuin is Nisuin. There should be no difference. It takes her out of her father's rishus, and that's that. So therefore, we have to say that Yud, would accomplish only Kiddushin, even within that, we would have to say only if it would work only according to the Yosef of Yehuda, because according to the Chachamim, if we said according to the Chachamim that the yield is accomplished using the original money that was received for her, then according to Rabbi Akiva, and the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, that you can't sell your daughter l'shifchus achalishus, then there's nothing to talk about selling her as an almana anyway. So the Gemara says, although Rav Nachman Le Yitzchok to Amar. Now, what about according to Rav Nachman Le Yitzchok's understanding of Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda? The Amar Afilu of Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, Moris HaRishonis, L'Kiddushin Nitnu. He says that even Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would say, further on, the Gemara, we're going to discuss Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda and the Chachamim, and we're going to have two different ways of understanding his opinion, of which one is, so far we've been talking about one understanding of Rabbi Yossi, of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, which is the sum of the Gemara's understanding that he holds the yud is not accomplished through money, but just through the fact that she's his shifta, and he has the right to do yud. But then we have further on, Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok says, no, even Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's accomplished through the money. So then, the mind mukim law. So how is he going to understand that scenario where the daughter is already an almana and the father yet has the right to sell her as an omah hevriya and was saying he could conceivably sell her to a kohen gadol? Now the question is, in other words, if we go according to Rabbi Akiva, there would be no way to make that scenario work because Rabbi Akiva says that you can't sell the shifchos acharishus. So the Gemara answer is necessarily necessarily then Rav Nachman Yitzchok is going to have to say that b'risa goes only like Rabbi Eliezer, who says that he can't sell her for shivchos as an amah hevriya a second time after he already sold her the first time as an amah hevriya. Abul shivchos achar ishus motzi mazbin la, but he could sell her as a shivcha as an amah hevriya after ishus. So therefore, so you don't have to have, according to him, you don't have to have all these elaborate scenarios. You could just have a plain way. Yield was done. Then the master dies. Erosin has been, only erosin has been accomplished. And now that's only shif chosacha ishus, and therefore he's able to, you don't even need that, actually. You don't even need that she was sold the first time. Just the father accepted kedushin on her behalf the regular way, without her being an amar yudia. Then her chosin died. So now she's an almana, but now shif chosacha ishus, from the as it holds, you're allowed to do. So therefore he'd be able, therefore you have that scenario that he'd be able to sell her. So as an omer hevriya. Now Rashi explains, up until now we didn't want to have to do that, given that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva against Rabbi Eliezer, because Rashi points out Rabbi Eliezer is shamusi, who, as we talked about the other day, where shamusi means either he's a talmid of his shamai, or it means that he was placed in nidui. So most of the time the halacha is not like him. So till now we've been trying to make the braisa work according to Rabbi Akiva. Now, according to Rav Nachman Yitzchok, we're saying we really don't have a choice. He has to necessarily say that it goes only according to Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. Then Tosfos learns the other way around. Tosfos said, we discussed yesterday briefly that Tosfos holds that the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva may have to be flipped around because of various considerations. So we would say the other way around, that we said that the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Shimon agree with Rabbi Eliezer because they use his drasha of the Vigdeva, and they use that to say what the halacha is as far as Shifchos HaFarishus. And Rav Shimon, we said, agrees with both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. So then Tosfos says, until now we were trying to make it work according to Rabbi Eliezer, since the Chachamim exclusively go according to him. Now we're saying maybe Rav Nachman Yitzchok has no choice but to make this Braisa go according to Rabbi Akiva, or rather to go according to both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, meaning, in other words, according to Rav Shimon. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, Boyrish Lokish. Now let's talk more about this matter of yield. We know that the Odin can do yield for himself. He can decide that this Amma Hevriya is to be his wife. And we can also have, the Pasuk mentions, the Imlivno Yodena, that he could also have it be yield for his son. So, Boyrish Lokish, Maush Miyad Odin Livno Kotten. Can he do yield for his son when his son is still a Kotten? Do we say Bnoi Omrachmana, Bnoi Kolderhu? The Pasuk says V'im Livnoi Yodena, so maybe that would mean no matter what age the son is, so even if the son is a cotton, then the father can still do it. Or maybe the point is that the Bnoi has to be similar in a certain way to him in the sense Mahu Godol af Bnoi Godol. Maybe the same way as he has to be a Godol. So maybe the Odin himself is a Godol. Maybe the son has to be a Godol as well. Now the point is, in other words, usually we have, you know, when it comes to a Ktana, we have the concept of Kiddushin for her, which the Chachamim made. Maybe this is also when Rashi said before that Nisurin Adaraisa, implying that Kiddushin or not. Yeah, because we're talking about a Ktana over here. The concept that a father can be Makadosh his daughter is Darais, actually, as Biti Nasati Lo Ishazeh, that a Ktana can be married when her father is not around, then that's the Rabban. Anyway, the point is that it's one thing with a Ktana, we have the concept of her getting married, but with a Katan, we don't really have that concept. So maybe when it comes to you, then also that doesn't work. Or maybe over here, the fact is, the Torah says, being with no Yodana, so maybe specifically over here it would work even if he's a Kohen. So Gemara says, Amar Rav Zera Toshma, let's prove from the following case, from the following Braisa. The Pasuk says that adultery, having relations with an Eishes Ish, is Chayiv Nisa, and the Pasuk phrases it, the Isha Sheyinaf as Eishes Ish, if a man commits Niyuf with the wife of an Ish, he does niyuf with the wife of his fellow man, then there's misa. So now, when the pasuk says ashes ish, what does that mean? Ish prat lakotten. When it says ish asher yinafes ashes ish. So there's two ishes over there. So the first ish means prat lakotten, means as opposed to a cotton, that if a cotton commits adultery, he's not chayiv misa. Which Tosfos says, the fact is, she becomes also to her husband, and she would even be put to death for it. If the boy is 9 years old or over, then his bia is considered bia in halacha, so he would cause that she would be chayiv misa, so therefore you would think that maybe in this particular case, maybe he would be chayiv misa as well, and therefore the braisa needs to tell us based on the pasuk that nevertheless he's still below age and therefore he's not chayiv misa. And when it continues, Asher Yinafas Eishes Ish, that he commits Niyuf with the wife of an Ish. So again, the second Ish means Prapla Eishes Cotton, as opposed to the wife of a cotton. So again, in other words, if somebody committed adultery with the wife of a cotton, then there wouldn't be Misa involved because her husband is only a cotton. She might be also to him, but she wouldn't be, and the boy wouldn't be Chayiv Misa. So now, if you say now that the father is able to do yield for his son, then Mimken Matsinu Ishus the cotton, then you find a Daraisa level that there can be that a cotton has a marriage. So then in that case, why shouldn't therefore there should be Missa involved. Shouldn't that tell us that no, you can't do Yiyud for your son when he's a cotton, because otherwise it would be a full fledged marriage daraisa, and why shouldn't there be Missa if there was Niyud over there? So the Gemara answers back the Elamai Enemy Guide. So what are you going to tell me then? That the Odin cannot do Yiyud? Am I coming my like Kura? Well, then, on the contrary, you would have to ask, why would the Pasuk have to be excluding something that doesn't exist? On the contrary, Tishit Minod Miyayid. Shouldn't you be able to learn from that there could be Yiyud? So you would say in other words, there could be Yiyud for a cotton, and there is a full-fledged marriage here, Daraisa, and nevertheless, the Torah is telling us a Miyut that Misa doesn't apply if afterwards she commits Niyuf with somebody else. So shouldn't that prove, on the contrary, that Yud would work for a cotton? So Ravashi answers not necessarily, because you could say Hocha, here's another example where a cotton could have issues. Hocha b'yovam b'teisha shanim yem echad habar yevim tayaskinim. We could be talking about where it's a matter of yibum, and the boy, the yovam, is at least 9 years old. We're there at that point again, given that at 9 years old already, his bia is considered a bia. So therefore, if he does bia with her at that point from 9 years old, then he is koina her as a yavam to his yavam. So there you have a case where you have issues for a cotton. You don't need to say by yud specifically you have it. You could say you have it by Yib. You could say you have it by Yibum. Maybe in fact by Yud it wouldn't work unless the boy is already by mitzvah. Now Rashi explains that the 9 year old would be koneh her completely, for all purposes. Tosfos points out that no, we learned in Yevamos that actually that's really only midrabbana. As far as things like darshening her and other things like that, she wouldn't be considered ishtoi. Still though, Tosfos says, so what the Gemara means, so Rashi is saying the Daraisa Chazulei in the sense that once he's 9, then the Yibum is considered a complete Yibum. Tosfos says no, what it really means is that all you need for Yibum is Bia, the fact is, Midaraisa Chazulei in the sense that she is ready for Yibum to him no matter what, when he's a Gadol. When we say over here that, when we're talking over here about a cotton, the fact is that, as we said before, if he does Niyuf with an Eishas Ish, with an Eishas Gadol, then she would be Chayiv Misa and he would be Potter, and the same thing with other Arias. So you would think then that the same thing applies to Yibum. So you would think Hoyo Midaraisa Chazya. So in other words, we would understand the kibin de midaraisa chazulei would mean that maybe we would think she's considered full-fledged as wife, and no, we're saying it's only the rabban. So anyway, so going back to the Gemara, that's the point. Mao de tema, you would think, kibin de midaraisa chazulei, since midaraisa she is suitable for him, will be ose bia, and he's 9, so therefore his bia is a valid bia, habolem is chaya beishas ish, then later on, if somebody were to have relations with this Yavama, then he would be chayev, and she would be chayev as an Ishas Ish, from Ashmalan. Therefore, the Pasuk is telling us, from Asher Yunachas Ishas Ish, that no, because the fact is a cotton. So again, according to Rashi, they are fully married, however, the Torah is making an exception for this one thing of Niyuf, and according to Tosfos, the Torah is telling us that to begin with, they're not really considered married, because the whole concept that a Yavam, has relations with the Yavama and is koina her, if he's 9, is only midrabam. Okay. Anyway, the point is, so you don't have a proof one way or the other from that, because yes, the Torah is being mamayit, the case of an Eishes cotton, but not necessarily is that a case where there's yield with a cotton, because we could be talking about a case where there's yibul with a cotton. Okay. So the Gemara says, my havi Allah. Fine. So what's the bottom line? Can you do yield for your minor son or not? So the Gemara says, Toshma, Omer of Aivu, Omer of Yani, En Yud Elam Godel. Yud can take place only with a Godel. En Yud Elam Das. And Yud can take place only with the Das. It has to be with consent and with understanding. So if you want to ask Tarti, why do you need to say both of those things automatically? If you say that it has to be a cotton doesn't have Das. So therefore, automatically, yes, of course, if all you have to say is you don't have that it requires das, and automatically we'll know, therefore, that it can't be a cotton, because a cotton doesn't have das. That's how Rashi understands it. In fact, Rashi adds the point also that in effect, what you're doing is when your father is doing yield for you, then in effect you're making him a shliach, giving the kaddish for you. Well, a cotton can't make a shliach. Tosfos explains differently that no, what it means is the tauti means the two things seem to contradict each other. Ein yud ela begadol implies it'll work with a gadol no matter what, whether with das or not. But then we're saying ein yud ela das, implying that not. So what is it? Do you require das or not? So the one answer is matan farmer. The Braisa is not really, Reb Ivo rather, is not saying two reasons. He's saying one thing and explaining. Why matam in yud ela begadol lefish in yud ela midas, because it requires das and a cotton has no das, therefore a cotton can't do it. What it means, by the way, we say of course throughout Shas that a cotton has no das. What does that mean exactly? I mean, a cotton can be smart and understand what's going on. There is an explanation. The Rebbe Rashab actually gives an explanation. I think in Kodesh Atfila that says that that das primarily means the ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and to empathize with them. So a cotton doesn't really have that ability yet. He really only starts developing that ability when he's by mitzvah or guru bas mitzvah. Some people, unfortunately, don't develop that even later in life, but at least the minimum that a person needs to be in order to develop that kind of sensitivity is bar bas mitzvah. Anyway, so we can say, therefore, that yes, we're saying that's not two separate statements, not two separate dinim according to Rashi, or two things that contradict one another according to Tosfos. It means that the reason why yield doesn't work for a cotton is because he lacks das. So therefore, so that answers Rosh Lakish's question. So note, the father cannot do yield for his son when he's a cotton. The Iboyesema, or another possibility, you could say, in fact, Rav Ivu is saying two different things, but you could say, my midas, midas dida. The word midas over here means it requires her das. In other words, in other words, two things. Ein yield ela begadol would mean that the one who's doing yield, the man who's doing yield himself, has to be a gadol. And in addition, ein yield ela midas would mean that she has to agree to it as well, that she's going to become his wife. Tosfos actually discusses earlier in the Masechta, Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eger, refers to it over here, that maybe Midaita, I mean, to begin with, the father sells her Bar Kocha. He doesn't need his daughter's permission to sell her as an Omo Hevriya. When we're saying over here, Midaita doesn't necessarily mean that she has to agree to it, Tosfos says. It may mean, actually, just that he has to inform her that he's doing it L'Shem Kiddushin. Now that you're my Oma Ivriya, you've been working for me for the past however many years, now I want to change that, and I want to make you my wife, I want to inform you about that. But not necessarily, Tosfos says, does it actually require her das in the sense that she has to agree with it. Anyway, whatever the case, the point is, the Braisa, when it says midas, may mean that it requires her das. The Tani Abaya Breda Rav Abohu, on the side over here, it says instead of Abaya, it should be Avimi. We find in a number of places in Shas that the Rav Abohu had a son named Avimi. Anyway, he says, Ashalo Yoda, the Pasuk says that he is miyayed her for himself. The word yield basically means to designate. It's actually from the same Shurdish as Moyed, which is like a designated time for Hashem and us to meet up, so to speak. It's also why the Mishkan is called Oyo Moyed. So Yud means Chitzorich Legada. He has to inform her that he's going to marry her. So Rashi also points out that the word is Yoda is also, we're learning it as Miloshin Deya. It's we take the letters Yud Ayin Dalid, and from that we can make the Shodash, Deya, da, which means to know. So therefore, it means that he has to make her know that he's going to marry her. So who Tony Loss, Abaya or Avimi taught that brisa, Vahu Omala, and he also explained what it means is the Kedusha Yud that we're talking over here about when he does Yud, where he's saying, in other words, that meaning, in other words, the point is when a father is Makadosh his daughter, when he accepts Kedushin on behalf of his daughter, he doesn't have to inform her. He can do it. I mean, he eventually she has to know about it, but he doesn't have to check with her first. He can do it Baal Korcha if he wants. But here we're saying, when it says Malamach Tzarech Liyada, he's saying the Kedusha Yud that we're talking about when we're talking about specifically by Yud, Baal Libba de Rabbi Yossi de Yehuda, Dama Mois Harishonis Lava Kedushin Nitnu, and following the opinion of Rabbi Yossi de Yehuda that we mentioned earlier, that said that the original money was not given as kiddushin, meaning, in other words, Rashi had said, if we said Moris Harishonis l'kiddushin nitnu, then it would have meant that no matter what, even at the last moment when she's in Amah Hevriya, it would be possible to do yield. But since Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is going to say soon, we're going to bring that you have to do yield before her time of as an Amah Hevriya is up. So therefore, that implies that he says that it's not that the original money was given for yield, and therefore you can do yield based on that, but rather that you're doing yield based on the fact that she's still serving as an Amah Hevriya. Because in other words, the point is, if Moshe Rishonis the Kedushin Nitnu, then it would mean, in other words, that the father, in effect, did a deferred Kedushin. He received money, and he said, eventually, sometime during the time that you're having her as an Amah Hevriya, then you can decide at any time that those Kedushin should be activated, and you're gonna marry her. So therefore, that would mean that the father was the one who received Kedushin on her behalf. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is saying the money was not given for kiddushin, so here the father is not in the picture anymore to decide whether yield should be done. You have to inform her, and you have to get her consent or some kind of consent that she should agree to go through with this. So that would mean what we mean ein yield elamidas. Now, what about Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Afilu Tamei L'Kiddushin Nitnu? Now, we said before, Rav Nachman Yitzchok understands Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda differently, and says that no, the original money was given for Kiddushin, meaning that in other words, that in effect, to begin with, the Kiddushin is being based on the fact that the father received money, and now he's deciding that Kedushin should take place. So all he did is he left it up to the Odin to decide when to activate that. So then he would say, Shiny Hocha to Amar Rachmana Yoda. He would say, fine, but still the Braisa, he's not disagreeing with the Braisa. He's saying that specifically you have the din by yield because it says the expression yoda, which again is related to the word yodia. So therefore, yes, it was originally accomplished using the money that was given for her sale. Nevertheless, though, we're saying that he still has to inform her, and he has to get her to agree to this before he goes ahead and makes her his wife. So even though, in other words, Rav Nachman Yitzchok would say that normally when it comes to Kedushin, that's not necessary. It's just the father accepts Kedushin on her behalf, and then she has to follow through with it whether she likes it or not. But here it would actually be, because the Torah uses the word Yoda, then we would say not so, and she has to actually agree to it. Okay, the Gemara says, my Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, what statement of Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda are we talking about that we're learning within that, that we're discussing within that? How exactly, what is the logical mechanism behind Yud? So like this, Netanya, your order of a hefta, the pasuk says, it mentions the concept of yield, and right after it mentions the hefta. The expression in the pasuk is, asher lo your order, that he does not do yield, the hefta, then he has to enable her to go free, to be redeemed, as we learned a few days ago, gir and kesef, that he has to deduct the amount of time that she worked for him so far, and deduct that from the amount that he's going to demand for her release. So, but that hekesh between your order and hefta means tzorich shiyeh shohus bayin kedei pdiya. It means that when yield is done, it has to be that there's still the amount of time left in the day to do padiya, to redeem her. There's still something of the, in other words, what happens? It's already the 6 years are almost up. It has to be that there would be at least a pruta left of the amount that she was sold for. So if she was sold, let's say, so she was sold for some amount of money, we would have to calculate, we'd have to prorate that amount of money over the 6 years, and then we would have to see, well, is there, when we calculate, how much we might find, let's say, that we might find that every hour of her time was sold for a pruta. Well, then, in that case, if there's less than an hour left before the 6 years are up, then he's not going to be able to do, then he's not going to be able to do yield, because then you don't have a pruta left to do giroin. If there's enough time in the day left that she could do work that's worth at least a shava pruta, and therefore that you'd be paying at least a pruta for her freedom, mekudeshes, then she can be mekudeshes, being lab and mekudeshes. And if not, then not. Because in other words, that, because then you then, so in other words, what we're saying is that, then you don't have, you don't have a shava pruta for kedushin. So therefore it comes out on the face of it, Alma kasava moisa rishonis lab the kedushin nitnu. So evidently, therefore, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda holds, it's not that the original money was given for kedushin. If it was, then he wouldn't be making that distinction of whether there's a pruta's worth of time left or not, because regardless, the kedushin money was given to begin with. It would be the equivalent, the same way, for example, as let's say, a man could say to a woman, here is your money for kedushin, and the kedushin will take effect in only 30 days from now, and that works. So the same way, we would say that that the father, in effect, would be saying, I'm accepting kedushin money for her, and any time during the next 6 years that you decide to activate it, then you can do that. The fact that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is not saying that, that he's saying you actually have to have shohus v'yom, you have to have enough time in the day, implies that he's saying the kedushin is not taking place on the basis of that mois harishonus, it's just taking place on the basis of the fact that she's still working for him as an omah hevriya, and therefore that once there's not a pruta left of worth of her time, then he can't be mekadesh anymore. So that would show, therefore, that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda holds that the yud is not being accomplished through the father, but rather as an independent thing, as though essentially she herself is voluntarily agreeing to be niskadish. And then the Nachman Yitzchak Amar, Fivatem, the kedushin nitnu. No, you could say even the original money was given for kedushin, but you could say shiny hocha de amakra vehefta. Here it's different because the pasuk uses this expression vehefta, that there has to be enough to be poured to her. At the end, so yes, you could say the kedushin to begin with was done when she was sold, and it was meant to be a deferred kedushin, but there would be a gzeris hakasav over here that there still needs to be a that there still needs to be a pruta left. So you have two different ways of understanding Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, whether we say Moser Rishonis the kedushin nitnu or not. So again, if we say, so either way, the point is, we have a braisa that says it requires, the yield requires her das, and we could learn it either way. We could say that it means that the yield is not being accomplished using the original money, so therefore, in effect, it's as though she is just agreeing on her own to be niskadish, so then certainly we need her das for that. But even if we say that, that it is done based on the original money, nevertheless, we're still saying because the Torah used the word yoda, which is related to the word yoda, then therefore you need her consent to it as well. Okay. More on this topic of what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says. Now we're going to go kind of more back to matters of regular tradition. The last few blocks, we've been talking about matters of Omer Hevriya and Eved Hevri, but now we're going to talk about a din that more directly affects kedushin, and then we're going to continue talking about yud. So Omer Rava, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Adam B'Bitei Ketana, a man would be able to say to his young daughter when she's below Bas Mitzvah, Omer Adam B'Bitei Ketana, a man would be able to say to his young daughter, Si'i V'Kabli Kiddushayim, you go out and you receive your kedushin money. Now, she's a ketana. She doesn't have a yad. She doesn't have usually the ability to acquire anything on her own. But in this case, it would work midi Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. It would work based on what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying. that lav omer of Yosef Gehudim Moser Rishonis lav the kedushin nitnu. Now, didn't we say that according to the first understanding of Rabbi Yosef Gehudim that the yield is not being accomplished using the original money? It's being accomplished just with the fact that she's still an Omahavriya, v'china shayev a shava pruta. So what happens is, when she still has a shava pruta's time left to work, havu kiddushi, then it is a valid kiddushin. In other words, therefore, we're saying, according to that way of looking at it, the father is not involved in this kiddushin at all. She's doing the kiddushin all on her own. And usually as a ketana, that wouldn't work. But nevertheless, we're saying here it works. In effect, what she's saying is that I still have a pruta's time worth of work for you. In return for not having to do that work, I'm willing to be niskadish to you. In effect, the father is telling her to begin with, siva kabli kiddushayim. The father, in effect, is telling her that you're going to go out, you're going to work as an omahavriya, and eventually you'll have the option of deciding to accept kiddushin for yourself. Therefore, Rava says the same thing over here, where there's no situation of omahavriya involved, but it's still the same kind of thing that the father could tell her, go receive this money, and once you receive it, then you will be niskanish. Now Tosfos discusses that, after all, we learned previously on Daf Zayin, we said that if you even have a case about Revos, you can have where Reuven says to Shimon, give a mona to Levi, and my daughter will be niskadish to you, and that works as on the grounds of Orev. In other words, in effect, Reuven is making himself an Orev to Levi. So why shouldn't he be able to tell his daughter herself to go and receive her own kiddushin? What does that have to do with what we're saying with Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda over here? And Tosfos discusses, because after all, he's saying that to her, and she's a ketana, and she doesn't really have a yad, but still, since we're saying that she has a yad relative to yud, so therefore we're saying it works in this case as well. And Tosfos also brings in the point of das acheres machnela. If she were to find something on her own, then maybe, let's say, she wouldn't work for her to be koneh. But here, since her father, who is a gadol, is telling her to do it, so therefore it works, and she's able to receive that money and acquire it as kedushin, and then therefore the kedushin does work. So it works, in other words. So it would work. But Amar Rava Amar Rav Nachman, also Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman, here's another din that we can also learn from what Rav Yosef of Yehuda says. Hamakadish milva sheyesh alei mashkin, if a man is makadish with a milva. Now, earlier in the perek, we talked about that, and we're going to learn later on in the Masechta as well, that you can't be Makadish for Milva itself, meaning if previously he had lent her money, and now he's saying, I want to be Makadish you with that money that you owe me, and instead of you paying me, I'll consider that as Kiddushin. It doesn't work because she's not receiving anything at the time. We say Moris HaRishonis, a milva lahitzah nitna, a milva is meant to be spent, and therefore you can't say that there's anything that she has at the time that she's receiving that therefore should work as kedushin. Elsewhere, the Gemara tells us, by the way, there's a big argument about that between Shaul and David. David was Makadish, he wanted to be Makadish, one of Shaul's older daughter, Merab, using a milva, using the fact that Shaul owed him money for killing Goliath, and he was going to waive that in order to marry Merab, and that doesn't work for halacha because of Makadish Mamilva and Mukadashas. And then further on with Michal, there was a further discussion whether it's also Mamilva, whether maybe there's Milva or Pruta, whether there's also a Pruta over there, because Shaul tells him to go kill him, Plishtim, and bring him there. Or else, anyway, the point is that this matter of Makadish Mamilva figures in that episode in Jewish history. Anyway, the point is, though, you can't be Makadish with an actual Milva. But here we're talking about Hanoas Milva, where earlier in the Masechta, earlier in the Perek, where we had said that you could be Makadish with Hanoas Milva, and you had a few different explanations of that, but one is that it was Hanoas Mechilas Milva, that you're saying that you're saying, and that you're saying, you're saying that you owe me this money, but I'm going to be moichel of that. I'm going to be moichel that, or I'm going to be moichel that that you have longer to pay me, or whatever. That kind of thing. You could be mekadesh with that. So here we're talking about though the milva has a mashkin on it. So he has a mashkin on that. Milva. Now earlier on Daf Ches we had something about a mashkin that if you makadish a woman with a mashkin then it works. So Tosfos distinguishes there we were talking about a mashkin that was taken later on. The borrower defaulted and therefore you took a mashkin from them. Here we're talking about a mashkin that was given to begin with at the time out of the loan. So now he's saying I'm not returning the mashkin, but I'm going to be moichel on the loan. So that would work again. Midi Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, we can learn also from what Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying that would work. The Rashba explains a little bit differently. He says that it's true you can't be makadosh for milva, but where the milva involves a mashkin, then it would work. Because in other words, you said, why do we say you can't be Makadish for Milva? Because you're not receiving anything at the time. But here, well, Makadish for Mashkin would mean that you're returning her the Mashkin. So therefore that works. She is in fact receiving something. And that works based on Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. Lav, Omer Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, Moser, Rishonis, Lav, the condition Nitnu. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is saying, according to our original understanding, that the original money that was received for her when she was sold was not given for Kedushin. And therefore, hi halvari. So therefore, in effect, what you have over here is a loan. The father received money, and he's saying, based on this money, you have the option sometime during the next 6 years to make her your wife. Vahi gufa mashkin. She herself, in effect, is a mashkin, because that's how the odin is being paid back for the money that he laid out. And b'chimashaya b'shava pruta, and yet when there's a shava pruta left of her work, umiyayid, and then he does yud, have a kedushin, then kedushin is accomplished. Hachanami loishna. Therefore, the same thing over here would also work. That you can be makadosh b'milva sheyeshalei mashkin. So again, we're talking about that there's a mashkin that was received at the time of the halva, and now Tosfos is saying he's moichel her the milva, or the Rashba says slightly differently that he's returning her the mashkin, as the case may be. Either way, the point is it works. So the same way it would work by regular kedushin as well. So two different dinim that we can learn from what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Okay. Now going back to yield, Tana Rabbanan, Kate said mitzvah yield. How is the mitzvah of yield accomplished? Oyvelo b'fnei shnayim. The Odin says to the Omer Hevriya in front of two people, and Pnei Yeshua points out, if you say like Rabbi Yosef Yehuda that it's something independent of hers, then of course you need two Edim for it. But even if we say Moser Rishon is the Kedushin Nitnu, you still need two Edim over here because Ein Davishim Erva, Pachas Mishnayim, you always need two Edim to establish a matter of Erva. It's one thing, the Pnei Yeshua explains, if it was that you give her money now and you say the Kedushin should take place in the Achshav al Achashloshim, there you don't have to say anything 30 days later, but that's because he didn't say at the time he did. He said to her to begin with, you're Mekudosh to me, Ma'achshav al Achashloshim Yom, so 30 days later you don't need Edim and him to say anything. Here, to begin with, when he bought her as an Omer Hevriya, he never said anything about Kedushin. Therefore, when he's doing Yiyud, he's going to have to say. So he says, b'fnei shnayim, he says, in front of two Edim, hareyat mekudeshesli, you are mekudesh to me, or hareyat meuresesli, or you are meures to me, or Hagoyis Habach also adds, you can say, hareyat meuedesli. And all of that works. I feel the soif sheish. That works even if it's at the end of the 6 days, on the last day of the on the last day of the 6 years. But I feel the samach l'shkia sachama, and that would work even if he does it right before shkia. Now again, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, you would have to have at least the prutas left of her time. And according to the chachamim, that wouldn't necessarily be necessary. Anyway, the noyig bar minag ishus, from then on, he treats her as a wife, He doesn't treat her anymore as a shikha. So what does that mean? For example, the Shita Lenodulami points out, we learned in Ksubas, for example, that let's say when it comes to spinning wool or whatever typical malachas that a wife does to bring an income, there's a certain amount that she has to produce, no more than that, as opposed to a shifcha, an Alma Hebriya, you don't have a limit like that. So as an Alma Hebriya, he could have had her do as much as she's capable of producing in a day, even if it's far more than that, whereas as a wife, he can't do that. He can only have her do the regular amount that any other wife is going to make. So now Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says, like we said before, im yesh shoros b'yed, but elasis im a shava pruta, if there's still enough time where she could be doing a shava pruta's worth of work, and mikudeshes, then she's mikudesh with that, v'im lab ena mikudeshes, and if not, then not. So in other words, again, we said before, according to the first understanding of Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, which was Rava's understanding and that of the Stamma de Gemara, then we would say it means, in other words, because he's not being Mekadesher with the money that he received, that he paid for her in the first place, he's being Mekadesher with the fact that she still has work to do, and therefore there has to be a Shava Prota left of that. We said, according to Rav Nachman Yitzchok, not so. It is because Moris HaRishonis, but nevertheless, since the Pasuk says Vehefta, then it's Xeris HaKosav, that there has to be at least a Prota left. Well, the Braisa continues, Moshal La'omel Isha. You can compare it to a case where a man says to a woman, he's skadshli ma'achshav la'achas shloshim yom, be mekudesh to me now after 30 days, meaning, in other words, that it means that it should take effect retroactively to now if he decides after 30 days that it should. And if somebody else now were to come and be Mekadesh her during those 30 days, she would remain Mekadesh to the first one, because at the end of the 30 days, he decided he wants to go through with it. And therefore, retroactively, it means that it took effect to then, because he said, me'achshav. So he did the kiddushin first, and now there's no room for the second one's, kiddushin to be chal. So therefore, we can compare that to the case of the Omer Ivri over here. So the Gemara says, Moshe Laman. Which of the Tanoim is this Moshal? Is this Moshal according to? Which Tana's opinion is it meant to illustrate? Ilema Moshal of Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda. Do you mean Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda is giving it as a Moshal to explain his point? No. No, he's saying on the contrary, that the Kedushin takes effect only now, and therefore there needs to be at least a Prota left. On the contrary, based on Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, you would have to say if somebody else were to be Mekadesher before this Aden does, then that other person's Kedushin would take effect. Because his Kedushin only take effect at the end when he decides to go ahead with it, rather than, according to Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, if we say that he's not being Mekadesher with the Pruta that he originally paid for her, but rather with the Pruta of her work that's yet to come, then it means that there was no Kedushin, there was no pending Kedushin until now, and somebody else would be able to be Mekadesher. That would be exactly the opposite of this Moshel. So Omen of Ach Brederava, Moshel Rabbanon. You're right, the Moshel is meant to illustrate the Rabbanon's opinion. So they're saying it doesn't matter whether there's a Shavu Pruta left, because, in other words, in effect, when he bought her, he was saying that it doesn't matter whether there's a Shavu Pruta's time of left. They say Moshel Rishonis, the Kedusha Nitnu, so therefore it's in effect that when he paid for her 6 years ago, he was in effect saying to the father, I may eventually decide to be Mekadesher with it. If I do, then it should be Me'achshav, then it'll be retroactive to now. So you could compare that to the case where he gives her money and he says Me'achshav Alachashloshim. In which case, the Gemara says Pshita. Well, obviously, then it's the same thing that you can derive one from the other, and that's basically the same case. So why would the Chachamim have to be giving a mushal to illustrate their position? And anyway, it seems very obvious. And the answer is Ma'od Tema Hala Omalame Achshav. The fact is, when the Odin says Hareat Mekudeshes or whatever, he doesn't say Me'achshav. So therefore, you would think that maybe it doesn't. Maybe it takes effect only from when he decides to do it. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the Tana is telling us that only when he says Me'achshav will it work. So it's true. If he doesn't say, So therefore, you would think, in other words, that what if he didn't say me'achshav? In a general case where the man says to the woman, hareat mekudeshes li la'achas shloshim, you would think that that kedushin takes effect retroactively, and therefore nobody else can be mekadesh or in between. Kamash malon, therefore, the Tanna is saying that no, that only if you say me'achshav doesn't work, and if you don't say me'achshav, then it doesn't, both by regular kedushin and by yield, so therefore you would have to say me'achshav in order to make it work retroactively. Now that's all Rashi's explanation. Tosfos doesn't like that because you usually have when you have a mushal, it's coming to tell you an extra dimension about something that you were learning before, and then it's saying you. So the mushal ma devadoma, and then from the mushal you can derive a detail that you otherwise would have known. But over here you don't seem to be doing that. Here it seems the other way around, that you're learning from yud to the mushal. So Tosfos says like this: there's no question that if you tell an isha hareat mekudeshesli ma'achshav la'achas shloshim yom, that somebody else's kedushin wouldn't work in between. The same thing by yield. If somebody else comes in as mekadesher during the 6 years before the yield, then we're saying for sure it wouldn't work. Moshe Rishonis the kedushin nitnu according to the chachamim, and therefore there's no room for somebody else's kedushin to be chal. All it is if after the 6 years you decide that he doesn't want to be miyider, then she goes free, and it turns out that money was not given for kedushin, or in effect it would be, in other words, that as if, like he said, I'm being mekadesh al tnai, and the tnai was never fulfilled or something like that. So now we're saying the Chachamim, according to the Chachamim, we're telling us that exactly that. We're learning from the Moshul precisely that point that nobody else can be Mekadeshur during those 6 years. And we're saying, isn't it obvious? And the answer is no, because the fact is, even according to the Chachamim, he didn't say Me'achshav, so maybe it should only work from the time of the Yud and on. And was saying that no, on the contrary. So Rashi is saying he actually has to say me'achshav. Tosfos is saying that no. Once he does, to begin with, he bought her, and we know that one possibility that can result from the mechira is yield. So it says if he said me'achshav, even if he didn't actually say that. So that we're getting from the moshul, which otherwise we wouldn't have known. So it comes out, in other words, machlokas in halacha between Rashi and Tosfos, if he didn't say me'achshav. When he pays the money for this Alma Hebriya, according to Rashi, therefore it leaves room for somebody else to be Mekadesher until he decides to do yield, according to Tosfos. Okay. Tanya Idach. Now we learn another Braisa. Hamuicheres Bito, a man's father sells his daughter as an Alma Hebriya, v'holach the kid shel acher, and then, having sold her, he goes and is mekadesh her to somebody else while she's still working as an amayvia. Sichik ba'odin. Then he could just laugh at the other and mekadesh es l'sheni, and she's mekadesh to the second one. In other words, he can say to the other, you figured that maybe one day you'll have the chance to do yield with her. Ha ha, joke's on you. You can't do yield now because I already accepted kedushin for her from somebody else, and she's still under my rishus, and I have the ability to do that. You only now have her as an omo hevriya for the rest of the time, and then she's gonna go free, and you have no option of yield. Kodesh is the sheni, so she's the Kodesh to the second one. Divrei Rabbi Yosi b'Yehuda. That's how Rabbi Yosi b'Yehuda says. The Chum say that no, if the Odin wants to be miyayed, he could, and that would undo the other one's kedushin. Just like we said before, Moshal Omer Isha Areyat Mekodesh Tzli La'achas Shloshim Yom, like the case of a man says to a woman, you're mekodesh to me after 30 days, uvach abekitcha v'sech shloshim yom, where somebody else is mekadesh her during the 30 days, mekodesh es l'sheni. Then she's mekodesh to the second one, because the first one said the kedushin is going to be only 30 days from now. So again, we have to ask Moshe Leman, who is this Moshe according to? Ilema l'Rabbanon, is it according to the Rabbanon? What do you mean? Ami Rabbanon im rotza l'yayid miyayid. On the contrary, the Chachamim are saying that the Odin is in the position of the first one who did Kedushin over here, and the one that the father accepted Kedushin from is in the position of the second one. So Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda is saying that the second one's Kedushin are chal. The Chachamim are saying that no, there's no room for his Kedushin to be chal. The Odin can still do yud. So the mashal doesn't work to explain the Chachamim's opinion. Ela Amar of Acham Redirav, a mashal of Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda. The mashal is explaining Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda's opinion the same way as in that case where he didn't say me'achshav. He says, you'll be Mekodesh to me 30 days from now. Well, meanwhile, during those 30 days, somebody else has the option to be Mekodesh her the same way Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda would say, during the 6 years, somebody else has the option to be Mekodesh her. Because he didn't say me'achshav. Again, Tosfos discusses this and says that you have the problem that the Moshul was supposed to teach us something which we wouldn't have otherwise known. Here, on the contrary, the Moshul just seemed to be an illustration without teaching us anything. And again, Tosfos says that what it means is, in the regular case of Kiddushin, he didn't say to her anything. He didn't say, in the case of regular Kiddushin, he said after 30 days. Here, he didn't say anything about after 30 days or after 6 years or anything. Maybe it means he wants it to be me'achshav because, after all, he has the option to do yiyud anytime he wants. And no, since he didn't say me'achshav, then that means that Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda is saying the Kiddushin didn't take effect. So according to the Chachamim, that's what we had the first mashal. Even though he didn't say me'achshav, it still works retroactively in the case of an Odin and Amon Ibriya, whereas according to Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda, it's not. And according to Rashi, it's the other way around. Anyway, so then the Gemara asks again, Pshita, obviously that Moshul fits exactly with what Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda is saying, and the answer is again, in the case of the Odin over here, he didn't say to her anything about after 30 days, so maybe it should be different than the case in the Moshul, Kamash Malan, and therefore we're saying that no, it was done with the understanding that it could be done later on, but not Lamafreya. So again, according to Rashi, it would come out that only if he says Lamafreya, then that's one thing, but otherwise, even if he doesn't say Lamafreya, because he just did yud later on, and Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda holds Moisa Rishon is Lav the Kedushin Nitnu, so therefore there's possibility for somebody else to be Mekadosher in between, whereas pointing to, and we understand that from the Moshul gives us the point where you don't say Me'achshav, and therefore somebody else has the ability to be Mekadosh in between, and therefore it would be the same thing over here. And again, you have the different understandings of Rashi and Tosfos, of what happened. Does he actually have, because he didn't say me'achshav, or is it that because he didn't say me'achshav, therefore it doesn't take effect retroactively? So what exactly are we learning from the mashal? In the case of the Odin, he didn't say me'achshav, but he also didn't say la'achal shloshim yom, and therefore and yet Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda is saying that still what it means is that the yield takes effect only from when he says it, not earlier, and therefore there is a possibility for the father to accept kedushin on her behalf from somebody else. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tanya Idach, now we learn yet another braisa on this point about yud and about when it works and when it doesn't. A man sells his daughter as an omeivia, uposak amnastula viyayid. He makes a deal with the Odin that you're not going to be doing yud. I'm strictly selling her to you as an oma, but I expect to still marry her off to somebody else afterwards. Niskaima tnai divid a meir. Rav Meir would say that would work, and that's a valid tanai, and therefore now the Odin can't do you. The Chum say no, that tanai is not valid. If he wants to do yield, he would still be able to do that. Because he's trying to make a tanai against something that it says in the Torah. If he's make a tanai against what it says in the Torah, then it's no good. So the maisa is still going to be valid. The selling of her as an omer hebriya will still be valid, but the tanai will not, say the chachamim, and yud could still be accomplished. So I'm going to ask the little mayor, Tanai Kayim. So you're telling me, according to the mayor, the Tanai should work? Why doesn't the mayor agree with that concept of Masna Amashikos Vatarah? Vahatanya, Ha'imel Isharayat Mekudeshesli, Amanas She'imahalai Sheikh Susva'ina. A man is Makadish, a woman, and says, Amanas, that I won't have to provide you with Sheikh Susan Oina. We learned back in Kedushin, in Ksubas, that ksus definitely means clothing. She'er and oina, we had two different opinions. One is that she'er meant food and oina is the regular times of having relations, and the other opinion was the other way around. She'er meant having relations and oina meant food. Whatever the case, those are the three things that a man is chayev for his wife min haTorah. But now if he makes a t'nai and he says that on condition that you want that I'm not obligated to you in she'er ksus va'oina, haveiz ha'makudeshes ha'tnoi batal divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says that she's mekudeshes and the t'nai is bottled completely. Rav Yehuda, the davish of a mammon, t'nai kaim. Whereas Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda says anything involving mammon, the t'nai would work. So therefore, yes, if he makes such a t'nai, he won't be chayev in providing her with food or clothing because that's davish of a mammon. It won't work for oina because that's not a davish of a mammon. So Tosfos points out, therefore, the Chachamim are not contradicting themselves because they could say that the t'nai to not do yield is a davish of a mammon. But Rav Meir, who holds that the t'nai is completely bottle when it comes to she'er ksus va'oina, he doesn't hold of the exception for davish of a mammon. So then, according to him, how could a t'nai not to do yield work? The answer is amachizki a shiny hacha do amakro la'om. Here it's different because the pasuk says the father sells her as an oma. Now, what does that mean? What does that word teach us? If he's selling her, obviously she's becoming an oma. It means pomim shein moker elo oma bovad means sometimes he's selling her only as an oma. So Rav Meir is learning from that, therefore, that there can be a case where he sells her exclusively as an oma and is saying, in other words, that she the odin has no option to turn her from an oma into a wife. What are the Chachamim doing with that word la'oma? And the answer is Haim and Baruch who look at the Tanya. They use it to teach us what we learn in a Braisa when it says la'oma melamed shemoshur lepsulim. That teaches us that he's able to sell her even to somebody who's posel, for example, a mamzer or a nosin who would not be able to do. They're not allowed to do yield with her. So therefore, he's selling them to her only as a shivcha, only as an oma ibria. It still works. And the reason is v'haloid dinu. The reason is because you can figure. Now you have to ask, why does the pasuk need to tell us that? Shouldn't it be a kavachomer or not a kavachomer, but a mamatzinu in mekadosh lepsulim loyim karen lepsulim? If he's able to be mekadosh to such a person, kedushin would be toifus for the mamzer or nosin, even though it's also. So shouldn't it be possible to sell it to her, or to sell her to them? What's the chiddush? And the answer is, because after all, but on the other hand, you could answer, it's not a valid kavachomer, mala mekad shel psulim, shekein odin mekadosh his bidik, she naira. After all, when it comes to being mekadosh her to psulim, he could do that. We find that he has stronger powers with being mekadosh her because he can do it, even when she's a naira, even when she's over 12. As opposed to sell her as a, so therefore, you can rent a psulim shein on mocha as bita shein naira, but on the other hand, he can't sell her as an omo evria once she's a naira, because we learned before that simonim make her leave being an omo evria, and instead of kavachomer, that he certainly can't sell her once she's developed simonim. So therefore, you could slog up that kavachomer, and because of that, tamad loy malama, therefore, the pasuk says la'oma malamet shemalat shemocher lepsulim. From that, we learn that he could also sell her to somebody who's posel, because even though yield is not going to be accomplished, nevertheless, conceivably, it could be, because kedushin would be toimus. Rabbi Yezer says, you don't have to learn it that way. Im malamet shemocher lepsulim, if you just want to learn the fact that he can sell her to somebody's posel, you don't need the word la'oma. The pasuk starts out by saying, if she's bad in her master's eyes and he doesn't do yield, implying, so, and the point is, on the one, the pasuk is saying, but it continues, that he does yield with her. Again, following the Cree, where the word is loy with a vav, that he is miyayed her to himself. So that would mean, in other words, so what are you saying? Is it that he can't marry her, or is it that she could? So what it means is shara'a b'nisueha, it means for her to marry him would be a bad thing. It would be osir because after all he's a mamzer or nosin or what have you. Therefore, and the pasuk is saying that nevertheless, ashalo yo'oda, if you were to do yield, it does work because kedushin are toifus, because it's only an isulai. So therefore, Rav Eliezer says, ma tamad lema la'oma. So what instead do we learn from the word la'oma? Melamed shemoshra l'kroyd. You can learn from that he could sell her even to relatives, even where kedushin wouldn't be totus. So now you can't learn that from Marin Raw Ba'in Adonai, because there you have Kedushan Atoifas. Therefore, you need a separate Pasuk La'amah to say that even that would work. Now, again, you could argue, V'aloi Dinu, shouldn't it be a Kavachomer that you can learn that anyway? If you can sell her to Psulim, even though it would be a degrading thing for her to be sold to a Mamzer or Nosin or what have you, and they might even go and do yield, given that they're going to figure it's only an Isser Lav and we're allowed to. Loyim Karen Lekrovim, shouldn't he be able to sell her to relatives where there's no degradation in that, and where they know they can't do yield because she's related to them, and then Kedushin aren't Tophis? So why does the Pasuk need to tell us, says Rabbi Eliezer? And he answers back, no, because Mala Mokra Lepsulin, Shim Rotzla Yayed Miyayed. The fact is, when he sells her to an apostle, conceivably he could do yield if he wanted to, because he'd be over on a lav, but nevertheless it would be chal. Yib Kerenela Krovim Shim Rotzla Yayed Enim Yayed. How could you compare that with that he'd sell her to relatives, where even if he wants to do yield, he can't. So therefore, we can slog up the kalachomer, and because of that, oma krola oma. Because of that, the pasuk has to say the word la oma malamet shemocha lekrovim. From that, we learn that he can sell her even to krovim, and would work even though there's no possibility of yield. So Rabbi Eliezer is learning that from the word la oma. So the mayor would say we learn from la oma that you can make a t'nai to not do yield. The Chachamim disagree, and they say you can't make such a t'nai, but they're saying you could sell her in a scenario where yield should not take place because he's an apostle, or maybe even where it can't take place because he's a kohen. So the Gemara asks with a mayor. Now, what is your mayor answer to that? He would say, "Psulin nafkale mehich de nafkale le Rabbi Eliezer." As far as psulin, he learns from the same thing from imra'a be'ena adineha. So he learns, in other words, ra'a b'nisu'eha. We're talking about a scenario where it would be a bad nisuin, where nisuin would work, but where nisuin would work, but nevertheless, we don't want it to happen because it's an isur lav. So he would say, from that, you learn that you can sell it to psulin. And bekrovim, as far as krovim, he doesn't, because he holds like the rabbanon. Damni ein mocha the krovim, where we said the rabbanon disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and say you can't sell her to krovim precisely because then yud is not going to be possible. So the mayor holds like that and says therefore I don't need to learn that you can sell her to krovim because as a matter of fact you can't sell her to krovim in the first place. So in other words, the vote would be, Reb Meir would say, you can't sell where there's no possible of yield at all, but when there is a possibility of yield, then Reb Meir would say you could make a t'nai to block the yield because of that. So in other words, the Shita Lo Delami distinguishes between where there's a flaw in the sale itself versus where the sale is perfectly valid, but you're just putting a t'nai. So the Gemara finishes off. Tony Choda. Now we learn one brisa that says ein mochra la'aviv ve'ein mochra la'bnoi. You can sell a father can sell his daughter as an amah yevia to his father, but not to his son. But Tani Idach ein mochra loy la'aviv ve'loy la'bnoi. Another brisa says you can't sell her to his father or his son. So how do we reconcile these brises? So b'shleima ein mochra loy la'aviv ve'loy la'imay. Loy la'aviv ve'loy la'bnoi. Kedabanan. The brisa that says that he can't sell her to any relatives would follow the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon are saying when there's no possibility of yield, then you can't sell her. So therefore, there's no possibility of yield in either of these cases. His father should be, she's his granddaughter. He can't marry her. To his son, then she's his aunt. Or she's his sister. Or she's a sister, rather. And you can't marry your sister either. So that brisa would go according to the Chacham. But if you say you can sell her to his father, but not to his son, Kaman, which opinion does that follow? It doesn't seem to follow either one of them. Because the Rabbanon say you can't sell her to relatives. Rabbi Eliezer says you could sell her to relatives. So who is it going according to? The answer is, this Braisa, after all, could go according to the Rabbanon. The Chachamim will agree it is valid where there's a possibility of yield in some way. Given that yield can be accomplished, as we learned before, not only with the Odin, but also with his son, then you have to consider it like this. You have the Odin in the case when he sells his daughter to his father. So now there is a possibility of yield. She can't marry She can't marry the Odin himself because he's her, she can't marry the Odin himself because he's her grandfather, but she could marry the Odin's son because a different son would be her uncle, and she's allowed to marry her uncle. On the other hand, to sell her, for the father to sell her to his own son, that wouldn't work. She can't marry the Odin himself because he's her brother. She can't marry the Odin's son because that's her nephew, and an aunt and a nephew are not allowed to get married. So therefore, because they're Arias. So in that case, there's no tzad yud at all. But at least if he sells her to his father, there is a tzad yud because conceivably later on, the Odin, her grandfather, could be miyayed her to one of his sons, who's her uncle, and that would be a perfectly valid marriage. So even the Chachamim would agree that such a thing is valid.